Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Eczema, it affects one in five children in Ireland. It can be exhausting for parents to manage, and joining me with tips on looking after those flare-ups, busting myths around treatment and sharing the latest updates from research and clinical practice is Professor Alan Irvine, who's consultant dermatologist with Children's Health Ireland. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for being with us. This is a scourge for so many people. I mean, I said it's exhausting for parents. The poor children who have to deal with this, we know it's an awful thing for them to cope with. But will you tell us exactly what it is, firstly?
Yeah, sure. So eczema is a very common thing in Ireland and in developed countries, and it's increasing in developing countries too as we become more urbanised around the globe. Up to about 20% of kids will have eczema to some degree in their childhood. And of course, for most of them, that's quite mild. But at the apex of the pyramid, there are some kids who have moderate and indeed very severe eczema. So in terms of the causes, we know a lot more than we used to do about eczema, what causes it. And it's a combination of a defective skin barrier or a genetically different skin barrier, so that that's more easily triggered, and then an inflammatory response, and then some abnormal, what we call microbiome, you know, abnormal bacteria on top of it, which is more like of a secondary thing. And a lot of that research actually was done in Trinity, many groups there, Padraig Fallon, Rachel McLaughlin and others, very interested in driving us to the roots of what actually causes eczema. So we have a much better understanding of that, and we also have much better treatments than we did, especially for moderate and severe eczema, than we used to have years ago.
Okay, well, let's get to some of the questions, because there's plenty of them coming in, sure. As you can understand. So this listener says, my children both have it. They're under the care of a dermatologist. We try to manage it as best we can at home with creams and ointments and baths. And we have a care plan involving a prescription cream as well. However, their hands and their feet are areas that never really seem to clear entirely. It's like we get to a stage where the skin is almost cleared up on the hands and feet. Then it goes back to being quite sore and red again. And they're both prone to tearing the skin at nighttime in their sleep. So do you have any advice about the hands and feet?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get into the real weeds of individual cases, but maybe I should speak just in generalities a little bit and try and be helpful that way. You know, the hands and feet, particularly the hands, they're exposed to everything, you know, and when you're talking about small kids, that's, they use it to feed, it's out in the air, it's more likely to get infected. It's if you dry air, cold air, the transition between all of those different environments, your hands and face are the areas that are most exposed. So they can be extremely difficult to control. You know, if your child is still itching, that's another sign that you've not quite got the control that you need. So in a general scheme, most children with eczema will get controlled by a combination of prescription creams. Sometimes they're topical corticosteroids, sometimes they're not topical corticosteroids. Other creams called topical calcineurin inhibitors, it's a big word, but the common term for that would be protopic or tacrolimus, and they're not steroid creams. So usually with a mixture and trying in the long term to lean away from the steroids will get good control. But a sign of control is when you can sleep through the night without being itchy. Mm-hmm. And anything less than that is saying that you're not quite getting the control that your child needs, because eczema can be not clinically obvious, as in it sometimes doesn't have to look red to be incredibly itchy for a child or indeed an adult to experience a lot of discomfort and difficulty sleeping or difficulty doing their work or going to school. Mm-hmm. So if you're not getting there with steroid or non-steroid creams or combinations of all of that work that families do, like some families do 2 or 3 hours work a day, it's incredibly burdensome, then there is there are options where we move on to what we call systemic treatments, which could be drug treatments, either oral treatments or injectable treatments. And that's for the kids with moderate and adults with moderate and severe eczema. And they often close that gap, that effectiveness gap between where you can't get everything controlled with creams into something that can really transform kids' lives, depending on how severe they are, you know. And obviously it's hard to get into an individual case remotely.
I understand. And so on, but you mentioned steroids there. I mean, you have to be careful and judicious, don't you, about the use of steroid creams?
Yeah, of course, the long term plan with people, with anyone, children or adults who've got eczema, is to wean off and become not dependent on topical corticosteroids. But there is a role for them in eczema. The rule is you use the least amount of the least potent steroid for the least duration of time, and try and mix, space out the steroid, so it's not daily application when you're in a good maintenance phase, or substitute in something like tacrolimus, which is one of the few options that we have that are not steroids in Ireland or in Europe. So getting that mixture right is really important, so that you're not continuously exposed to strong steroids for a long period of time where it can cause damage.
I have a parent of a four-month-old now who has signs of eczema on the backs of her knees, elbows and around her neck. I wonder, is that eczema? I mean, I would imagine that this is something that is it often misdiagnosed?
It can be, but it's very common, and it's generally pretty easy to diagnose, and it's something that GPs are very familiar with. So
would
normally,
you say that what that parent is describing there, backs of knees, elbows and around her neck and a four-month-old baby, that is eczema?
It sounds very typical for it. Uh-huh. You know, obviously, you know, I'm not seeing the child in front of me, but it sounds like, we call that flexural eczema. So flexural just means in the folds, you know, behind the neck, in front of the elbows, behind the knees. That, those are very classical sites for eczema.
And what would that parent do?
So again, I'm assuming that they've had some help. You know, as I say, primary care and general practice are very good at that level of relatively mild eczema. You know, there'd be a care around bathing, just to avoid anything that's overly soapy and foamy and damages the skin. Careful moisturising with simple moisturisers, and there's a whole range of those. I'll not call out any brand name here. Mm-hmm. And then probably needs a very short duration of a very weak topical steroid for a week or two, and then maybe just down to one or two days a week would typically, for that presentation, would be enough. And then after a few weeks, maybe no steroids at all, because it tends to be very responsive in young babies at that age.
Right.
And treating them early and actively is important, you know, because it's like a fire. You know, inflammation is just a Latin word for being on fire. And like any fire, the quicker you switch it out, the less damage that it does and the more it catches hold. So treating early and proactively is definitely a good idea in a 4 or 6 month old.
Well, that parent also wants to know if that baby, if she'll grow out of it. And I'm sure many parents have asked that question.
Okay. Yeah, so what we've done, again, is some research that we did it with colleagues in Bristol and London. We looked at, you know, 20,000 people and followed them up over the first 20 years of their life to try and answer that question, you know, we so often get asked, do people grow out of it? And the answer is a lot of people do grow out of it, but not everyone does. And the markers for those who don't, if I can define that in the negative in a way, you know, the people who don't grow out of it, they tend to have early onset eczema, tends to be quite severe, tend to have other what we call atopic or allergic conditions, you know, like food allergies, like asthma and hay fever, tend to have a family history of eczema. They tend to have very dry skin, and they tend to have mutations in something called filaggrin, which is work that we did a number of years ago. So there's a pattern of people who don't grow out of it, and then many, many people do grow out of it. And it's quite common to see kids not be bothered much by eczema after the first 4 or 5 years of life, but then it can sometimes come back, and sometimes come back significantly in their teenage years or early 20s. So if you have a predisposition, you know, if you're set up, if your skin barrier and your inflammatory response is twitchy that way, what we call type 2 or allergic inflammation, if you're prone to that genetically, then it can trigger again later in your life. If you get the right provocation, the right environmental stimulation, that can happen again. So most people, it becomes manageable, and you can make it less of a big deal in their lives, you know, which is really the target, rather than to sort of permanently cure it for life. That's elusive at the moment to do that, frankly.
I know you mentioned the creams that people should be using and what people should be bathing in. I mean, what we're talking about there is a sort of an aqueous cream. Isn't that the general name for them? Like, as simple as you can find.
Well, aqueous cream is something that we like as a substitute for soap because it does have what we call surfactants in it. So surfactants, if they're left constantly on the skin, can actually dissolve what we call the lipids in your skin, and the lipids are what makes your skin moisturized and flexible. So aqueous is fine as a soap substitute. It's not really a great moisturizer for people with eczema. It is less surfactant than a regular soap, but it's got more than what you would have in a bland moisturizer.
Yeah, I suppose I'm conscious, Alan, that there are some products on the market that you can get over the counter and they're for, you know, sensitive skin and they've got nothing in them, and then you bring them home and you're on fire. So people just have to be really careful what they're getting, and probably a pharmacist is your best bet to ask for advice on that front.
I think pharmacists do give very good advice on that. Yes, I agree.
Phototherapy then, when does ultraviolet light therapy come into the treatment plan?
Yeah, so UV light is now called narrowband UVB light. It's kind of a very very fixed wavelength of light that's used for a lot of inflammatory skin conditions, mostly psoriasis now rather than eczema. In patients with eczema, it can make them a little hot, a little red, a little sweaty. That can stimulate their skin. Some people do benefit from it. Often people with darker skin types benefit from it, as opposed to people with lighter skin types who can be more prone to get a little red and burning. It can be seen as a bridge. You know, if somebody's been using a lot of creams and they're not benefiting, but they don't want to look at drug treatments, or it's not suitable for them, or it's not their choice, then phototherapy can sometimes have a role. Mm-hmm. It's relatively diminishing as a treatment in eczema around the world over the last 10 or 15 years as we've developed and got access to better drug therapies for this. So it's become less of a part of the treatment.
Of the treatment plan. I have a parent of a 3-year-old who has eczema that's diagnosed by the doctor. It's all over his body. It's itchy and it looks nasty. And the question they're asking is, could it be brought on by his diet? They say, no matter what cream I use, it won't go away. But now other children are looking and pointing at him, which must be dreadful for the little boy involved. On the diet question, though, have you seen that I know you mentioned people who have a propensity for food allergies might be more risk of eczema.
Yeah, so it's a complex relationship. Again, something we've spent 2 decades studying with people around Dublin, Jonathan Herhan's group as well, in surgeons. And what we know, and it's complex, so I'll just take a little moment to explain it, because there's a lot of kind of misunderstandings about it. But the greatest risk to have food allergy in early life is if you have eczema. So to the point that in the first year of life, it's really quite unusual to food allergy if you don't have eczema. And the reason that this happens is that when your body gets exposed to food through a defective skin barrier, then the immune system in your skin is different from the immune system in your gut. So our immune systems are all regional. So we have a system in our gut that's meant to tolerate food. So otherwise we wouldn't survive. You know, so you get egg through your gut, immune system recognizes, no, this is food, it's fine. But you're not supposed to see food through inflamed skin, and that gets recognized as a danger or an alarm signal, and that sets up allergies. So that's the reason why kids with moderate and severe eczema get more food allergies, not the other way around. And the way to fix that, and is if you can, to get your child eating these potentially allergenic foods very early in life, so that they get exposure and then become what we call immune tolerant, or they don't react to it. And that can be done through allergy colleagues and dermatology colleagues carefully and advisedly. Now, the other situation is, can food just trigger eczema by itself? And the answer to that is yes, but it's extremely unusual, and it's normally cow's milk. And it is, I want to stress, an unusual event. We get a few cases a year where kids take cow's milk and they become all over eczema, severe. But that is really quite unusual, as opposed to the thousands of kids who have food allergies as an add-on to their eczema. And we directly understand the mechanism of how that works now, actually. Mm-hmm. So that's the relationship. So if you've got moderate and severe eczema and your child reacts to a food, milk, egg, peanut, cashew being the common ones, you'll generally know that their lips and their eyes will swell, they'll spit out the food, they may become short of breath. And of course, that is something that's very alarming and concerning and needs to be dealt with. That's typically what food allergy looks like. We call it an immediate reaction. And kids with eczema are much higher risk of getting those immediate reactions, but it doesn't cause the eczema in the first place. if that makes sense.
Yes. Well, Alan, it's been really useful to talk to you. And if anyone is dealing with this problem in their family, the first port of call is your GP. But do please get help, because there's so many people, I feel, who are dealing with it on their own and they need some support. Thank you so much, Professor Alan Irvine.
Thank you.
Consultant dermatologist in Children's Health Ireland. Now, the nights are drawing in and getting colder, and coming up later, we'll be finding some recommendations for this perfect reading weather, because the Waterford librarians will be here with their picks for the autumn. Next, though, we're going to look ahead to what the presidency of the Council of the EU will mean for Ireland next year.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.